The first thing that you want to see is your intellectual property. Who owns the content that you are creating?
Hi, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast, where you can listen in on my conversations with peak-performing business leaders, creatives, and entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Every week, I bring you the latest scoop on what these incredible people do to succeed. Together, we explore how they think, what they do, and what inspires them to push their limits. I'm starting something new this week. If you have a question you'd like me to answer about creative thinking, innovation, or communication, head over to isoldat.com/question and ask away. If your question is chosen and you leave your URL, I'll name check you and your business to elevate what you do too. And now, let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg, and I am so happy that you're here, and I'm also really happy to welcome this week's guest. She's fabulous. I just met her, and she's wonderful. You're going to love her. Girija Patel started her legal career in 2006 as a prosecutor, and right after that, she realized that while she loved litigating in court, she had other passions she wanted to explore, so she tapped into her creative side and started a thriving social media platform called City Tattler. I love that, City Tattler, what a great name. It was there that she was introduced to an inspiring group of creative entrepreneurs. She quickly fell in love with this new creative community, but realized a real deficit of legal help. Anytime she mentioned her background in business law, she'd see eyes glaze over and walls go up. And so Girija realized that to her, business law is just a fact of life, but to her creative entrepreneur friends, it's often scary and overwhelming. So now she's got a great goal. Her goal is to make a legal, wait, let me say this right, because I want you to understand it. Her goal is to make legal a line item and not a panic attack. What a great tagline. Girija, welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you so much for having me on your show today. I am so honored to be here talking to you and to your audience.
This is so exciting because we didn't talk about this when we first met, but I actually got into law school and then didn't go, in part because I was afraid that my creative side would not get a chance to flourish. So I'm so glad to hear that you, who are an attorney, are working with creatives, that you're keeping that creative part of you alive in this way too. So I want to ask you, you focus on working with and helping creatives. What really made you decide to do that? Like, what inside you went, you know what? This isn't it. I need to go work with creatives. How did that come about?
So first of all, that is so cool that you got into law school and then didn't go because you were afraid that you lose your creative side, which I think is so true because we get locked into this box of what is expected as a lawyer. And it's hard to get out of that box at times. But what happened in my journey is that I actually did not realize I wanted to get into the creative industry and the creative world until much later. And that was also after I got exposed to the creative world. And I think we've all have creativity inside of us. It's just about tapping into it and exploring it more. And so I have been creative my whole life. I'm a dancer. I do traditional, Indian classical dance, and we would do all that stuff. But then I never really followed it because I was like, where am I going to go with this in my life? And so, law was always something that was very close to my heart and I always wanted to do. And after I left being a prosecutor, I started my own business at that time. I started my own law practice. But then once I did that, I had a couple of years into that, I had children. And so I wanted to just really focus on my family. But then the person that I am, I can't just sit and do, I just couldn't just do that. So I wanted to add something else to my, resume. And so I added, I was, helping my husband and his family business, and they're jewelry manufacturers and designers, and they have a jewelry store here. So I really got into that whole creative creation side there. And I got exposed to that. And so I was helping him with marketing and some other business aspects. And then slowly through there, I started realizing, I was on Facebook with friends and I was exploring Houston a lot. Like I live in Houston, Texas, and I wanted a spot where people can come together and talk about their city in real time and ask questions in real time. And so Facebook pages, Facebook groups are amazing for that. So I started the City Tattler. And then through that, I started going to blogging conferences because I felt like, you know, it's kind of blogging in a way and doing things virtually. And when I went to the blogging conference, I was surrounded by the most amazing creative minds. I mean, these women blew me away. So much knowledge, such tech experts are sitting in those blogging conferences. You know, there we think there's not enough women in tech, but tech does not mean just coding. Tech also means understanding how the new technology is working. And these women are fantastic. They know what they're doing. And I just got exposed to all of them and learned so much from them. And it was exciting because each time they're creating, they're excited. And I also realized that while talking to them, that there was such a deficit for law, like you had mentioned earlier. So whenever I would share my journey and where I came from, they would literally stop talking about the creative world and we would start talking about the law. And I realized that, okay, they need help and obviously I can help. So let me get into this. And I find so much pleasure helping them and so much satisfaction because I know that I am really making an impact in their business and really helping them in their entrepreneurial journey. And that just gives me so much more satisfaction than anything I have been doing before in law.
Wow. I love that you work with creative entrepreneurs. And it's interesting. You said it's better than anything you'd done before. And yet there seems to be such a divide between someone like you who loves the idea of business law and creatives and sometimes creatives themselves. I mean, in the intro, I talked about the fact that you saw people's eyes glaze over as soon as you talked about it, about law and being a creative. And what do you think accounts for that? What do you think that is the reason that creatives either shy away from it or they put up those walls that you, like you said?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's very similar to somebody who would be also talking about accounting or engineering. If someone comes and talks to me about engineering, I'm just going to like my eyes will glaze over. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And I also don't want to get it. So it's like, it's overwhelming for me. And I think that's similar with law because when you think of law or when you think of a doctor, or when you think of someone who's had to have that extra certifications and licenses and, you know, testing, you think that it's a lot and you also find it intimidating at times. And it can be somewhere where, you know, when people do think of law, they think of suing, they think of litigation, they think of disputes. And, you know, there's so much more to law than just that. And so what I try to do is I try to help them understand that it's not intimidating. It's actually very prevalent in your every single day of life and in your business. And so if you integrate it from the front end, it's going to be more palatable later on in life when you do have a dispute, you're going to mitigate those issues, or you're going to essentially dissuade somebody from following through with the dispute also if you have a solid legal foundation. A lot of times, you know, it's intimidating, it's overwhelming, and it seems like a lot of work and also a lot of money. I think the money part is big also. I think that a lot of entrepreneurs don't know. And if you don't know something, you sometimes fear it. And so my goal is to teach and educate. My platform is totally built on that. So I make people and my audience and my clients and everybody else that's around me comfortable with law. And then when you start understanding why it's needed, then it'll be easier to integrate it into your business.
And something that you just said that really sparked something in me. You said the words solid legal foundation. And if you are a creative and you're a creative entrepreneur running your own business, what is a solid legal foundation for you? What does that mean with respect to someone who is a creative entrepreneur, either starting their own business or in the middle of working, of running their own creative business?
Yeah. So I actually talk about the pillars, the legal pillars of a business. And the solid foundation starts from the very beginning, and that is your entity formation. The first pillar is, how is your business formed, and does it resonate with what you are doing in your business? So there's different formations of a business, and that could include being a sole proprietorship, or an LLC, or anything in between that, or even a corporation. And depending on how you set up a legal entity is also how you are protected in that business. If you are a sole proprietor, for example, and someone has a dispute with you, or somebody, for instance, falls in your store and you're a sole proprietor, then they can actually go after your personal assets if there's a judgment against you. Mm-hmm. And whereas if you're an LLC, a limited liability company, they have this corporate veil essentially that protects you from being so it's protecting your personal assets from being attacked during a judgment. And so that's really helpful, right? Like if you have a very high risk business, or you have a exposure to liability and risk in your business, you may want to consider having something like an LLC. So there is a protection and someone can't go after your personal assets, but only the assets of your business. And so, you know, your car, your home, your bank accounts are protected that way. And so that's the first thing. The second thing are contracts. I think contracts are so essential in a business. We don't even realize it, but we need contracts with our clients. We need contracts with our employees or the independent contractors that we work with. We need contracts with our vendors that we might be working with. We need contracts with other people also that we are working with. And those contracts are really helpful because they set up a relationship basis between you and that other person. And it sets up the expectations between the relationship and also the terms that you guys are agreeing upon. So contracts can be scary, but really it should just be a reflection of the conversations that you've been having with that other person. So whether it's a client or a vendor or an employee, you want to make sure that that contract between you is a reflection of the understandings that you have between each other. And also it gives you a nice roadmap, which helps you navigate through issues that you might be having. For example, in this time, you know, we're talking during COVID time, and a lot of my wedding planners and event planners and photographers really got into a bind with their clients. And if they had a good, solid contract, then it was easier for them to navigate those issues that they were incurring because of COVID. So contracts is really helpful. If you don't have one, even just something, write it down, have you guys both sign it, and that's an agreement. So you don't have to have something super formal either. It's just something that, you know, reflects the understanding between the parties. A third way also is your intellectual property. Protecting your intellectual property is a great way to, you know, start a good, solid legal foundation. And you can, you know, intellectual property includes your trademark. It includes copyright, it includes patents, it also includes your, you know, secret sauce, your recipes, your trade secrets. And so if you are able to protect it from the beginning, and you have to consistently protect it also, you can't just, you know, say I've protected it, but then you have to police it also to make sure that nobody is stealing it. And those are great ways to provide a solid legal foundation for your business just from the beginning. And then as you, you know, grow and as your business cycle turns over every year, you'll realize also the void that you do have, or the areas where you need to really work and modify your legal protection there. And then that just comes with experience and with time. But these are three ways to really set up a good foundation.
Wow. You just,
it was a lot of information.
It's sort of like, no, don't apologize. I think it's great. That's, it's like a little mini masterclass in how to do this. So, okay. So we have intellectual property, we have contracts, we have these things. I'll be honest with you. When I look at that, when I think about it, I'm like, absolutely, totally. I agree completely that these are all important. But then when I try to do it, and I'm a performer, in addition to being a speaker, I'm a musician. And so I'll go out and I'll book gigs or some other kind of performing event. And I have a contract, but I slaved over that contract. And it was amazing to me to hear, oh, you know, you can just write something down that's an agreement that reflects the relationship that you have between you and the client or you and the vendor or whatever. And yet, when you look at a contract, it is so confusing. Mm-hmm. And like an audio release form for this podcast, mm-hmm. I tried to make it as easy as possible, you know, and I thank you for that, by the way. You're the one who said, do you have an audio release form on an Instagram post? And I went, no, I don't have it. So, you know, and it's funny because I have a video release form for any time I do a movie or a shoot or anything that mm-hmm. I have people sign, but I had never thought to have one for the podcast. But what's interesting mm-hmm. is that video release form, frankly, I got it off the internet because I sort of read through it as best I could, but it's very confusing. There are so many different things to keep track of. How do you as an attorney simplify that for your clients? What do you do mm-hmm. to help people like me who would go, yeah, and want to run away?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you were my client and you came to me, I always have an initial consultation with all my clients. Mm-hmm. And through that, I kind of filter out what their real legal need is. And then once we've had that established, then we kind of go into the legal needs. And so I'll sit down with you. I'll send out, sometimes I send out a questionnaire also just to kind of facilitate that conversation. And it is essentially just going into and seeing where pain points are in your business. Now, this is when I'm creating a very specific, customized contract for your business. And so mm-hmm. I want to make sure we address those pain points. And if we can somehow mitigate those pain points through the contract, or essentially make them go away because mm-hmm. of the contract, then that's my goal. And if you come to me, of course, the contract will have legalese in it. If you come to me, it'll have all this boilerplate clauses and everything that makes the contract really long. But I also make sure that my clients understand the contract. So I sit with my clients after I've created their contract. I go through every single clause with them so they understand it. Because if you can't communicate your contract with whoever you're giving it to, you will not show confidence in your own work and mm-hmm. in your own business. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that can be a dissuading factor for them. And they may not want to do business with you if you can't explain your contract to them. So that's what my goal is to make you understand. Even if there's legalese in it, I will still sit down and make sure you understand what that legalese means. You know, of course, there is this, you know, there is legal language there. And the reason for that is because of the litigation that's happened in court and the way courts have, given their opinions on contracts. And state to state, contracts are different and the laws are different. Mm-hmm. And some clauses might be okay in Texas and some clauses might not be okay in New York or in California. So you just have to see from your state what is good and what is not good. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, lawyers know that for the most part, if you are going to a lawyer to draft a contract for you. And so that way, that's why, you know, when you go to a lawyer, it becomes it seems more complicated. But what I try to ease that pain is to sit down and make sure my clients understand. So I do take that extra time to go into it with them a little bit deeper mm-hmm. because I really want them to walk out really confident about their contract and also confident about the fact that they can communicate their contract to somebody else. I know that, you know, I said that, you can just write it on a piece of paper. And what I mean by that is at the end of the day, if you look at the definition of a contract, it really is just that. All the other extra stuff that we have put into it is because of opinions coming down from higher courts that this is the way it should be written. So that way there's no confusion. And so you have all these things and clauses and highlighted and all capped, you know, clauses in contracts. It's only because of what's been passed down in court and what's been set as a precedent. But that's mm-hmm. a very lawyer thing to look at. If you are just you and somebody else and, you know, you're like, listen, I want you to come and paint my house, right? You can have literally a piece of paper that says, so-and-so is coming to paint my house. I'm going to pay them this much. They're coming on this date. They'll finish on this date. And at the end of this, I'll pay them this much. And you both sign it. That's it. You're showing all the elements of a contract right there. So I feel like, you know, all the other things that have been added is just to protect us from other issues that might happen in mm-hmm. the future. Mm-hmm. So because we are a very litigious society, and so contracts are crafted in a way to protect us from any other issues that might arise. Does that make sense? I hope I was able to explain that a little bit better.
Absolutely. It does. And it's interesting to me, you know, that idea of when you were talking about the painting of the house, immediately while you were saying that, my brain went to, but what if they don't do a good job? Or what if they spill paint on the floor? Who's responsible for cleaning that up? Because the contract doesn't, what you described, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say if they do a bad job, they're going to come back and redo it free of charge. Or if they spill paint on the floor, they're the ones responsible for cleaning it up or whatever. Or maybe I'm the one responsible for cleaning it up. So it sounds like that kind of thing has gotten added in over time. Mm-hmm. And maybe the original contracts way back when they started writing contracts were pretty simple. And then they realized, oh, wait, this didn't work. A friend of mine says something about the gigging economy. He says, what goes wrong in this gig gets put into the next contract. And when I first heard that, I was like, yes, you know, and that's kind
so true,
of
though.
What it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I sit down with clients and talk about their pain points, that's exactly it, right? They've gone through different experiences with different clients or vendors or, you know, employees, whoever that contract is being built for. And I go through those pain points, and it's, you know, if you can avoid it through a contract or somehow mitigate it through a contract, then might as well do that, because that's just another layer of protection you're adding to your business and another contractual, you know, responsibility you're adding in your business.
It makes a lot of sense. It really does. And I want to ask you something. This idea of another layer of protection is great, but you keep using the word, or words, I should say, pain points. What does that mean with respect to the law or a creative entrepreneur's business? What does that mean related to your profession and what you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what I mean by pain points is exactly what, like using the painter and the home example, right? Mm-hmm. So say the painter is a creative and now they have a client who's like, oh, I don't like this color. I need you to change the whole house again. So that's a pain point now, because now he's putting extra hours that they've not talked about, and where the client might be like, I'm not going to pay you more because I didn't like that color and you should have known better. That's a pain point right there, because now they're putting in so many more hours and now they're putting in more money to get new paint, and they didn't sign up for that. So I think it's like areas where you truly feel maybe in your business or in the business relationships that you have that you might have been taken advantage of, or you feel like, you know what, that was just so inefficient because I didn't lay it out properly. I didn't outline it. I didn't describe how that is supposed to be managed. Or say, you know, you're a photographer and you go to a wedding and they're saying, hey, listen, we want you to stay for another 3 hours. Now, what does that look like? Are they going to pay you for this 3 hours? Are you going to be confused about that payment? Are they assuming that it's going to be for free? If it's already in your contract, there's no question. There's no confusion. It's already there. They know each hour will be so much money each time they, you know, for each extra hour you're sitting there. So I think like pain points are essentially areas in your business that consistently are issues where you just either are just kicking yourself each time because you've not fixed it. And, you know, sometimes those things can be remedied through a contract.
You know, it sounds, Girija, like you are talking about a really interesting form of stress management.
Because I guess so. That's a great way to look at it.
because it is. It's this idea, like you're talking and I'm like, oh, the last time somebody asked me to stay late and we didn't have overtime in the contract, I remember how stressful that was, you know, getting them to pay or whatever. So, but if it were in the contract, hey, if you need me to stay longer and every 30 minutes, you're going to pay me X amount of dollars and you want me for 2 more hours, I'm totally cool with that because it's in the contract and neither one of us has to stress out, you know, about what's going to happen and how. And so you just made a revelation for me, because honestly, this is not something I've ever thought about as a stress relief thing. And it really, that's really fascinating. I love it. So
yeah, it truly is. You know, I think like we don't think about those things until we encounter them. And then when we encounter them, the confusion is what causes stress, because there's all these emotions that are built into that confusion. And if you have it already outlined in a contract, there's no confusion. And also there's no emotional attachment to that confusion now either. Sometimes the emotional attachment is what makes people go through disputes also, or makes one person sue another person. Mm-hmm. So if we can kind of take that out of the equation, it really makes the whole situation and experience a lot better. So I completely agree with you.
Yeah, it's then you both get to stay in the flow, you know. You don't have to.
Absolutely.
There's nothing that there are no speed bumps. It's just a beautiful road you're driving down. I really like that. That's a fascinating way of looking at law. And I'm wondering now, whoever's listening to this, if you're a creative, did you have an epiphany too? Because that was a really beautiful epiphany for me. Thank you, Girija. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so happy.
So. Let me ask you, you probably work with a lot of different types of creatives. What sorts of things do you help creatives do with respect to legal matters? Do you focus on contracts? Is there something that is your, what they say, niche? Or are you, whatever legal issues you have, I'm here to help? And also the other question is with respect to geography, you mentioned something about, you know, you're in Houston and you've got Texas law covered. Do you also have other states covered? So if I'm here in New York and I go, oh, Girija, I want to hire you to do this for me, can you do that? Or are you basically someone who focuses on the Houston, Austin, Dallas, Texas area?
Great question. So I'm actually going to tackle it backwards.
Please.
So I am, I'm licensed in Texas and I'm licensed in Washington, D.C. Mm. And so I can practice in those two, in the state of Texas and in D.C. All state issues, I can practice in the state of Texas. Now, if somebody from Tennessee wants to hire me to do a state issue there, I can't practice unless I'm licensed there, mm-hmm. or unless I have a lawyer that is in my practice that is practicing there or has a license to practice there. And that goes for any lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. You can practice in whatever state you've been licensed in. And to get licensed, you have to pass the bar exam in that state as well. Mm-hmm. So that's that. However, there are certain federal issues that I can definitely practice anywhere in the United States. For example, intellectual property. That's a federal legal issue, and that's not controlled by the state, mm-hmm. per se. And so I can definitely help anybody in the state with intellectual property issues. Mm-hmm. Now, what I personally do is I do mostly transactional law for my clients. And what that means is I help them build their business on a legal foundation. Mm-hmm. And then I help them through their different business cycles as well. So what that looks like is exactly what I was talking about earlier with the pillars of a strong legal foundation is creating the right entity and creating the right contracts that you might need within your entity. Like say you're a partnership, you should have a contract between you and your partner and making sure that that setup looks right, right? Like how much money each person is giving and how legally that might be, like what the legal ramifications might be for that as well. Mm-hmm. So to communicate that with my clients and then also creating contracts all the time. Actually, I do that a lot. And also reading contracts and interpreting them and, you know, giving my opinions on them and reviewing contracts for my clients is something I do a lot as well. I also do some negotiating for my clients, mm-hmm. if they're talking to somebody else or if someone has given them a contract. And so then I might guide them on how to follow through with that relationship, mm-hmm. or, you know, how they should move forward in that relationship as well. So it's a lot of guidance and a lot of legal strategy also that goes into it, mm-hmm. with regards to my client's business. So those are the kind of things that I do offer. And that's on a one-on-one basis that I do. I also have something that I just launched, which I'm going to shamelessly plug right now.
Please.
In April, I launched a contract template shop called Your Contract Buddy. And that is essentially to provide creatives easy access to a strong contract, mm-hmm. that is a template, and it's not legal advice, but it's a template for your business, mm-hmm. and it's a great starting point. So mm-hmm. you don't feel like there's a lack of, but you feel you can be confident enough to move forward with whatever relationship you might be having. So it includes, you know, a podcast guest release form. It includes things like licensing agreements. It also includes, you know, blogger agreements that you might have, mm-hmm. or NDAs, which are the non-disclosure agreements, and employee contracts and independent contractor contracts. And I'm I keep pushing more contracts into it. I have coaching agreements on there. The idea is that, you know, I can give a one-on-one service and I give the full a la carte service, you know, whatever you need with regards to your business, I can provide that. But then there's certain times, and this is what I understand about my community, is that they can't afford it, and or they're just not in the mindset to afford it right now. Mm-hmm. And so to help them and to boost them to a point where they can afford it, I want to provide another platform such as Your Contract Buddy, where they don't feel like they're so they have security in law in that aspect. Mm-hmm. And so that's my goal. And, you know, even in that, like the video, I always put a video with each contract so you can, I walk you through the whole contract again, mm-hmm. so you understand it. And so I just, you know, those are the kind of services I provide. I also have a lot of free resources on my website and on my Instagram. So I want to provide information. I want you to feel confident and secure in law.
That's so lovely. I love it. And if you don't mind, I would love to have the website. The website will be on the show notes, but Your Contract Buddy, if I can have a link for that for the show notes, so that if anybody wants to go to Your Contract Buddy once they've heard the episode, they can absolutely do that. Cause I think that's your Instagram account has been incredibly helpful to me. Follow her on Instagram. All of that will be in the show notes. No, seriously, because this is not something most people, and maybe I'm generalizing, I don't know, but I have a feeling most people don't think about this stuff until suddenly they have to, if you see what I mean. So it's so great that you're there going, no, think about it beforehand, so that when you think about it after something happens, it's again a lot more stress-free, which I am now jumping on that idea. It's like, this is risk management. I love it.
It is. It's risk management. And you know, it's so true. I think as a lawyer, I feel like before I was, you know, kind of stepping into the creative industry, and that is my niche, right? That is who I serve. Mm-hmm. And before I was, you know, as I started dabbling into it more in the beginning, I was like, why don't you know this? But then as a lawyer, I know this. So I feel like everybody knows this, right? Mm-hmm. It's simply like you're a musician and you might know certain things. And when other people don't know it, you're kind of like, why don't you know this? But it's because you're so into it that you feel like everybody knows this. And that's how I was. I was like, oh my gosh, why doesn't anybody know this? And clearly it's because they didn't have the need to know it. And you're right. And you don't want to be in a position where you have to do it haphazardly. In retrospect, you want to be preventative.
Absolutely.
So I totally agree with you on that.
It's so interesting because my husband and I were just talking about this the other day for specifically reading music. I went, you know, I can't imagine not knowing how to read music because I look at a piece of sheet music and I know exactly what it means. And Rich, my husband, who doesn't read music, looks at it and he goes, okay, it's a bunch of circles and a bunch of lines. I don't know what it is, you know? And so it's the same thing here for someone who's been immersed in it, like you, it is just something that is part of who you are and you can't unknow it. You know, they're doing all this wonderful brain research about that idea of the fact that once we know something, it's impossible to unknow it. And therefore, it becomes part of our experience. And so for you, the law is that way. And for someone like me, who I'm not a dabbler in the law, I use what I need. And then I go to professionals to help me with that. But when you're in it, when you're doing that sort of thing, there are so many different issues. You know, you mentioned contracts, you mentioned all sorts of things. And one thing you didn't mention that I'm wondering about, the legal sort of ramifications, is insurance. And for example, as a professional speaker and a musician and an educator, I work with kids a lot and I have liability insurance. So because I want to be sure that I'm covered and everybody's covered before the gig, if you will. But how do you do that? How do you find it? What do you need as far as covering yourself legally? If you are someone, like you said, if you're someone in a risky creative profession, what do you need to know to have the proper insurance to make sure that the legal issues are taken care of?
Yeah, so you're right. I did not talk about insurance, and that's something I sometimes I do highlight it, but something that's not of my expertise, so I don't really like dive into it deep. But insurance, you know, you can have general liability insurance for your business, and you just want to make sure that whatever insurance you are buying is covering the intentions that you are intending it to cover. I think crisis like COVID and, you know, pandemics when things just completely shut down, and there's also this insurance where it covers your loss of business income, we have to be careful because a lot of those insurance did not cover pandemics. It did not cover a virus. And so you want to make sure that the insurance you are getting is covering what you want it to cover and is covering it the right way and not just barely, minimally, or you have to have XYZ A through Z met before it covers you because you're not going to get A through Z met at all. So you want to make sure that what you are getting is what your intention is. And, you know, there's so much insurance out there for so many different things now. And I do believe having a business insurance is very important because it, again, adds another layer of protection. It's like an onion and you just keep peeling it. And the more layers you have, the harder it is to get into this core of it. Like it takes longer. So when you have insurance, it just adds another layer of protection for your business. And you want to see where your exposure is to liability. If you have a brick and mortar, you want to have insurance that covers anyone falling and hurting themselves in your business, whether it's an employee or a guest, right? You also want to make sure that there is insurance covering loss of business income because something happens to you and you just can't do something because you're incapacitated or, you know, for 2 months you're in the hospital. What are you going to do then? So you want insurance to kind of cover those random different issues that might happen but could potentially happen. So that's something that I do, you know, recommend to my clients is to have those insurance protections depending on their business and what their businesses are doing. You know, some businesses are very benign, like there's very little exposure to that business, but you should just have some basic something because anybody can sue you for anything. Nothing in this world can really stop anybody from suing you. Even if you have a solid contract, they can still sue you if they want to. That can't stop them. So you want to make sure that you are protected in as well as you can be protected in that sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And going back to contracts, it's the same kind of thing. It sounds like this idea of a level of protection for you as the vendor or you as the client, that's what it's providing. But when you're working with a creative on a contract, let's say they're a performer or they're going to be an artist doing an exhibition somewhere, what are the kinds of things that they need to look out for when, you know, before they sign on the dotted line? What would I need to look for as a musician? What would I need to look for in a contract to make sure that it was going to cover, like you said, my needs as far as a level of protection?
Right. So I actually have a freebie on my Instagram links about this, what to watch out for when you are given a contract. Because there are certain things that when a person receives a contract, especially creative, a lot of times they feel scared that they can't negotiate or they have to agree to everything. But really, there are certain things they have to look out for. And as a creative, and especially a musician, the first thing that you want to see is your intellectual property. Who owns the music you are creating? Or who owns the content that you are creating? And I see a lot of problems that happen with this. There's this one particular clause called made for hire. Made for hire is essentially used for independent contractors. And if company A is hiring an independent contractor, they might have in their contract made for hire, which is essentially saying that whatever this independent contractor is creating for the company is the company's. Because the default law is that whatever this independent contractor is creating is theirs. Intellectual property rights are theirs. But made for hire transfers those rights and assigns those rights to the company then, which in some cases is fine. If you're a website developer, I mean, I would want to own my website. So I think that's okay. But if you are a musician and you are creating, you know, a music for an album that is a group of other musicians creating, you know, so you want to make sure that your interest in that album is equal to everybody else's, but also you want to make sure that you own your music and you're licensing it to the producer at that point, because, or, you know, something where even if you are giving them assignment of ownership, that you have the license to use it. So you want to make sure that you don't completely negate your ability to use the product that you're creating or the content that you're creating. And you can use it for your promotional purposes, at least bare minimum. And so
Go ahead.
Oh no. So that's like a really important thing for creatives is the intellectual property ownership. I cannot stress that enough. You know, who owns the copyright is the main thing. And then the trademark also, like if you are a, you know, a blogger, for example, you want to be able to use, if you're working with brands, you want to be, you want to have the license to use their brand name to promote their brand. And you don't want them to come back and say, oh, well, you know, you're misusing our trademark. Like, okay, but you and I have a relationship. So you want to make sure that those things are clarified in the beginning and there's no confusion later on.
Okay. That makes all sorts of sense. It does. But I'm going to ask you to back up.
Absolutely.
What is intellectual property? What does that actually mean?
So intellectual property includes your copyright, includes trademark, it includes patents, and it also includes your trade secrets. And for all for our purposes, I'm really going to just focus on trademark and copyright. So trademark is any identifying descriptive source that identifies your brand. So it could be your name, it could be your slogan, it could be the design. So for example, if you're thinking about, say, Tiffany's, right? The Tiffany store, their blue box, that's a trademark. That blue box is theirs. They have ownership over the color also. And the way that Tiffany's is written is theirs. That's trademarked. The name Tiffany's for purposes of selling jewelry in retail, that's theirs also. I'm pretty sure they have other ownership and trademark as well. And so you go in to the USPTO, the United States Patent and Trade Office, and you can register your trademark there. And you register it in different classifications. And when I mean classifications, it could be retail. It could be for online business education or for online sales. So there's different classifications that you can apply for. And then you you can either get registered there, they'll approve your registration, or they'll deny it and you can re-register again. But the process is there only to edify your trademark. There is a common law protection of trademark. And what I mean by that is the minute you start using your brand name, as long as nobody else has it and no one else has been using it, you're creating a trademark in there because you're using it. So in America, in the United States of America, the trademark law is first to use, not first to register in the office. And some countries it's different, but in the United States it's first to use. And so your, you know, your podcast, you're first to use the name of this podcast. So this is yours. You can put a TM on the side to let everybody know it's yours, but you don't have to, because the basic right that you are given by common law, which is the basic right that you have, you own it unless somebody else has been using it before you. And then going to the USPTO and registering it just further strengthens that trademark. And you are now entitled to, if you do win, statutory judgment and damages, right? And you can get monetary, you can get monetary judgments because of that. Otherwise, you probably can't. It's more difficult. So that's trademark. Now, copyright is essentially protecting any original work of authorship that has been put into a tangible medium. What I mean by that is this podcast itself is copyright protected. Common law, there's copyright protected. The minute you create it, the minute it's unique and original and put into an original medium, in a, sorry, a medium of a tangible medium, like a piece of paper or a website or photographs or this audio that we're creating right now or a video that we're gonna create, that's protected by copyright. Now, to further edify that, you can go register your book, your blog, your photographs, this podcast, and the episodes in this podcast with the Copyright Office. And when you do that, then if somebody steals it, then you have claim to statutory damages at that point. And so, does that make sense? I know it's so much information.
No, no, no. It makes perfect sense. I mean, again, it's a, I'm looking at it like stress relief. And it... But there's, here's the thing. It makes a lot of sense. How often, I guess the question is, how often does that happen? How often would someone, because let me back up a little. I've made some art that I put up that was educational, and the people took it, and I put the little copyright symbol on it, but I didn't register it with the copyright office, and people took it, and it's all over the internet in a certain circle, and they're saying that it's theirs, you know? And so the trouble for me is I'm not going to go sue them to try and get my prop, you know, I'm not going to do that because my goodness, it sounds like it's a lot more work than it would be worth. But how often does that happen, that someone will take something, an intellectual property of someone else's, and use it as their own? What is the danger of that actually happening?
It's very often, actually, especially if you, you know, just like with your example, you put up art and people took it and claimed it theirs. There is this misnomer that anything on Google is free to take, and it's not true. It's actually quite the opposite. There's only a few things that you can take, and Google is not one of those. Like, you know, pictures that you see on Google are not free to take. They're actually owned by somebody, most likely than not. And you have to be careful, because there are a lot of companies out there that very intentionally put out stock photos and stock imagery for you to take, and then they'll come and track you down and sue you
for taking the photos. Wow.
And they have a full right to do that because it's theirs, and you can't use it for any purposes. It's not even if you're not making money on it, right? You just can't use it for any purposes. So you want to make sure you're protecting yourself. I'm not saying go and copy and register your copyright for each and everything that you're creating. But if you are creating, say, a course, say you created a music course online, you would want to protect that, because that would be something that you're earning revenue on. And you don't want someone to take that course and use it for themselves, like the exact same course, and use it for themselves in their own business.
Right.
And so you want to make sure you're protecting it. Now, ideas are not protected, right? Like, so if I have an idea, whether I write it down or not, it's not protected. Now, what is protected is, say I write a blog post and that entire blog post includes my writing, that is protected. And so we have, you know, there's not everything is protected by copyright, but a lot of things are. So the, you know, the art that you created is protected by copyright, and you definitely have a right to tell them, shut it down. I don't want you using this. Even if you're giving me attribution, this is my big thing. Attribution does not equal permission. Absolutely not. Permission, true permission, is where it's written and it's given to you in writing and it's signed by the owner of that copyright or trademark owner. And that's when you get true permission. So, you know, another thing that goes with copy intellectual property is that you have to police it, and especially with trademark, because if you don't police it and you allow many people to use it, you dilute your trademark and then it becomes generic. And when it's generic, it's not protected anymore. And even with copyright, you want to police it. You want to tell people, hey, listen, you have to shut it down, or you need to get permission from me. You need to do something. You can't just take it.
Yeah, that, I mean, that, looking at it that way, it makes absolute and perfect sense. And what do you do? Like, what are the different layers of that? Because for using the photograph example, there are some that are copyright protected. There are some that are download this for free in a low res image. And there are some that are public domain. How do you tell the difference? And what are all of them as far as copyright is concerned? How, like, if I were looking for an image to use for an Instagram post or something like that?
Right. So I would first say, you know, you're going to a website and you're trying to get a picture that you want to use for your Instagram post. I would go and look at the website's terms and conditions. You know, that thing that we always click but never read. That's the thing that you want to read that.
Right.
Because the terms and conditions are generally telling you what the copyright protection is and how you can use the images on that website. And so if it is a free stock portal that you're going into, they generally want your email. And in consideration of that email, they're giving you all this free stock imagery, right? It's, you want to read what the conditions are for whatever membership you're in or for whatever download that you're doing on the computer. And so when you do that, you have a better understanding of how you can use that imagery. Can you use it for purposes of earning money? Can you use it on something that you're earning money? Or can you just use it as a picture that you're posting on Instagram, but you're not earning money on it. Mm-hmm. Right. So you want to know, like, what are the ways you can use that image? Because you don't want to be in a bind later on, because you might have to take down that, and you might have to redo things again, which is again money that you're throwing into your business that you don't need to, and you can prevent. So you want to make sure that I would, just literally go to the terms and conditions, mm-hmm. and read what that terms and condition is saying. Now, if you go do a Google search and you get all these pictures, please by no means think that is public domain and it's free to use, because there's very little things that come under the public domain protection. So,
that Wikimedia has a pretty extensive library of public domain images, but a lot of them are, from 1906, and yeah, of course you can use it, but there's something that you said, terms and conditions, that sort of sparked in me this, oh yes, I wanted to ask you about that. Mm-hmm. With respect to a website, for example, on my website, I have at the very bottom a thing that says privacy policy, terms of service, refund policy, and disclaimer. And each one of those is going to outline, for example, what is the privacy policy? What do I do with the information that mm-hmm. someone who comes and uses my site will give me? Or what are the terms of service? What is my policy as far as somebody's unhappy and they want a refund or whatever? What is your suggestion? And is it too much? Have I done too much here? Or am I on the right track? Like, what is your suggestion for a creative who's got a website of one sort or another, and who wants to make sure that they have the website and the information on the website protected, but also has the protection of the people visiting the website in mind?
You are absolutely not too much. Like, there is nothing too much about what you're doing. In fact, you're doing exactly what you should be doing. So privacy policy for any website, whether you are selling or not on your website, you have to have a privacy policy there. It's required by law. Mm-hmm. Privacy policy literally tells the user of your website how they're using, like, what you do with the information, just like you said, mm-hmm. and for what purposes you're using their information, how you extract their information, and if you're giving it to any third party, and why you're giving it to a third party. And I say those because not all states require that. Mm-hmm. However, if you look at California, you want to make sure that your privacy policy is aligned with the California's Privacy Policy Acts and requirements, because more likely than not, there's going to be some people from California getting onto your website, and you want to make sure that you are protected from any privacy policy issue that you might be encountering in California. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that that's all in there. Now, there's another thing that came out a couple years ago with the GDPR, which is for the European Union. And you want to make sure that your privacy policy, people are on the fence about this. And there's some people that say, well, if you're not selling in the EU and you're not going to have any users in the EU, then it doesn't matter. And quite frankly, that's true. It doesn't matter. However, I think it's so much better to have an extra paragraph in there that provides GDPR type protection, because mm-hmm. you're already probably doing it. So make sure you are doing it and add it in there, because your privacy policy should be a reflection of what you are doing in the business. It shouldn't just be a copy paste from somebody else's privacy policy, mm-hmm. because what they might be doing might be different. So if you go to Amazon privacy policy, that might look very different from what you do on your website. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that your privacy policy is a reflection of how you are handling people's personal information. Now, with regard to the terms of service and terms and conditions, which includes everything that you had stated, it includes the terms of service, it includes the refund policy, it includes the disclaimers. So you want to have that in there. You're kind of laying the lay of the law. This is the lay of the land. Sorry. This is how you are setting up this. Your website is your home. And this is what people have to do when they come into your home, essentially. And these are the rules of the house, and they have to follow it. They can't just take your blog post. They can't just take the images or the videos that you put on your website and use it for themselves as if it's theirs. You have protection over that. You are claiming your stake on it. Like, even more, right? You're letting them know, even though there is this underlying common law protection, but when you again, reinforce it and reinstate it, it just adds that reinforcement to it. So people actually know and they kind of get it into their brain. Okay, I can't just pick this up and take it. You know, just even putting like a simple C with a circle and then like the date and then the company name and then all rights reserved, that also just further edifies your claim to fame for your business. And so, you know, like you're just like, this is mine. Don't touch it. I don't want you touching it. And so if you want it, you contact me, which definitely you can put in your terms and conditions, right? You can even say, hey, listen, if you love this image, contact me. We can talk about it. If that is something that you want to do. And the briefing policy is definitely very important to have, especially if people are buying from your website. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that the refund policy is abundantly clear. And you also want to make sure that your terms and conditions, your privacy policy, your, you know, the refund policy and the disclaimers and all are literally easy to access while they're purchasing. And there's an affirmative action to press the checkbox because that affirmative action equals agreement. They're signing an agreement, like that's their signage to, I agree to all of this. So that way, whether they read it or not, it's not your problem because you have had it there abundantly clear for them and available to them. Mm-hmm. And now it's their job to sit and read it also before they check box. So you want to have that in there. And the disclosures and disclaimers are essentially just saying, I might be providing all this information here, but I don't pretend to be an accountant. I don't pretend to be a doctor. You know, like say you're a nutritional website and you might have a, you know, you might have some teaching and certifications in nutrition, but you may not be a doctor. So you want to disclose that. Like, I'm not a doctor. So please don't take this as medical advice.
I mean, see, that's the thing. It makes all sorts of sense. This idea of, you know, like you just said, I'm not a doctor, so this is, don't take this as medical advice. And yet, in the age of the internet, if you will, there are a lot of people who are doing that. And there are a lot of people who are doing it without some of those protections in place. Like at the bottom of it, it's in my little widgets. And so at the bottom of every page, I have this. What does someone do when either they don't have those privacy policies and those terms of service words on their website and somebody has a negative reaction or a negative response, what happens then if you have it versus if you don't have it on your website?
Right. So if you don't have it, you are opening yourself up for a lot of liability risk.
Okay.
And that's just purely on a legal basis, right? Like, say your website, I'm going to go back to the nutritional example.
Okay.
Say your website is really promoting good health, is giving advice on nutrition, is giving advice on what to eat on a daily basis, is giving advice on, hey, if you don't have this vitamin in your body, you could have these kind of repercussions. Or because you're feeling tired and because you're feeling like your hair loss or whatever, then that means you could have a lack of vitamin D, right? So, you know, if you're giving advice like that, you're opening yourself up to a lot of liability because sometimes people will think you are a doctor because if your imagery of your website is coming across like, you know, professional, giving professional advice, it could be, if you were taken to court, it could look like you are giving professional advice in the capacity of a professional. And then you could be opening yourself up to not just liability for whatever happens to this person, but also pretending to be a professional, like criminal liability. So you want to make sure that you're not doing that. You know, for me, for example, with Your Contract Buddy, it's purely a template. It's purely a template website. I'm not giving any legal advice because that's not the intention behind that website. It is literally somebody coming in and buying a template. Specific legal advice would be, and I say it very clearly and abundantly on my website too, because I don't want anybody to walk in there thinking they're getting legal advice. I would be really disappointed if that happened. And I would also feel really bad because I'm not giving them legal advice. Mm-hmm. My legal advice would be me sitting with them one-on-one. They've hired me as their attorney, is written in my client retention agreement, and now we're having confident, you know, conversations that are protected by attorney-client privilege, which is huge, right? If someone hasn't hired me in that capacity, then any conversation I'm having with them is not protected by that attorney-client privilege. So that's a big difference to me. Now, if you do have those disclaimers and you do have those disclosures, and if somebody still comes on your website and doesn't read them, that's on them.
Okay.
And, you know, you still could be walking a fine line if you are portraying yourself to be a professional, even though you're not. Mm-hmm. And it might be in the disclosures, it might be in the disclaimers. But if it's not abundantly clear, mm-hmm. you might be giving a false advertisement. And so you could be opening yourself up to, you know, potential liability at that point. So you want to make sure that you are portraying yourself in a genuine and authentic way rather than pretending to be something you're not, because that will always, you'll fall on your face every single time. I mean, seriously.
No, no, so. Absolutely. I agree. It was just, you, I love how you just said that, you know, blah, 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 liability, la, 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 lawyer words. You'll fall on your face every single time. No, it was great. You went from, I'm a lawyer, to you're going to fall on your face every single time. And I thought, you know, you're a real person. And I so appreciate that about you. That was terrific.
It's so true though. Like, I mean, you know, how many times I've met people and they're like, can you do something? And I'm like, well, you know.
So. Yeah, because, well, no, because the thing is, you know, you're a lawyer. I'm sure people immediately go, hi, I need legal advice. My sister's a doctor and constantly people do that to her. Oh, can you look at the, no, I'm at a party. I have a glass of wine in my hand. So, you know, so you can call my office on Monday morning. That's the kind of thing. Hmm. But it is interesting. You know, there is this, you didn't get into this business because you weren't out for helping people. You want to help people. And so I understand that completely.
Yeah.
And there's also a time and a place, you know, so there's knowing that and being respectful of it, I think is really important. So I wanted to pivot just a little bit, and I know I could talk to you for the next 6 hours, and I know you have a life to get back to. So I have just a few more questions. First of all, what does a typical day at the office look like for you? It sounds like you've got a varied, varied thing going on.
Oh my, you know, typical has changed in the last few months. Sure. What typical was is, you know, not, but really my typical day is, you know, I start my day off. I try to tackle all of my client work first. And then I'm in my development mode also. I am constantly creating content for my audience and for my community, my followers, everybody, like just everybody that just makes my community up. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly creating content. And so that's like a big goal for me, is to create information that I can freely give and that can actually be helpful also. So that's the one thing that I'm doing. I work on different client work, and that can definitely be, that can be, you know, client calls. That can be me actually sitting and, you know, knocking out some contracts or other requirements for a particular client. And then, you know, then it kind of goes into mom mode. Like I have a mom, I'm a mom of two kids, and they're young and they're little. And so my days, I'm at home right now because I don't go to the office because of COVID and my kids are home. So this has just been the best thing for me, is to just be home and work from home. Mm-hmm. So my typical day in the office is a lot different than what it used to be.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I don't go to court like I used to, just because I do more transactional work. Mm-hmm. And so court is something that is not part of my daily. And right now courts are also all on Zoom for the most part.
Right.
So, we've become very innovative in the legal industry, by the way.
and we've all had to change with the times, you know. It's amazing. In about 2 weeks, everything had to change. All the schools, all the universities, people were congregating. It's just not happening that way anymore. So everything is all of a sudden very different. So I, as I said, I'm going to ask you just a couple more questions. I know your kids are, I've heard them in the background playing.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
No. No, please don't ever apologize for the joyful sounds of children playing. I think that's wonderful. I love it. It's kind of like,
I literally was like, you stay in this room. Don't come out.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it so much that you're, as I said, I said this before we started the actual recording session. I appreciate so much that you are being a mother to your children, doing this thriving legal practice, helping all of your clients, both online and before their clients and during, and you've got a lot going on. So I deeply respect all the balls that you're juggling so expertly. I think that's amazing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I can barely remember to feed my cats in the morning. So I'm very, very respectful of all the work that you're doing. So I wanted to just make sure that we have the actual website, the actual Instagram, and the actual Contract Buddy. Could you give those URLs? I'll put them in the show notes, but could you just say them for the people who learn better with their ears?
Absolutely. So my law firm is GBP Law. And so everything is GBP Law. So even on Instagram, it's at GBP Law. And my website is also www.gbplaw.com. I just try to make it really easy.
Consistency is queen. I think that's great.
And then Your Contract Buddy, I think it's like, I thought of that name because I was like, it's the easiest thing. Mm-hmm. Yourcontractbuddy.com. It's easy. Easily accessible. And, you know, I have tons of resources on my website. And even if you go through the Instagram links, I have, you know, you can access those resources through there as well. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm always available through DM and open to DM. I have Law Chat on Thursday, which essentially is a 10 to 15 minute quick law 101. And if you have questions, I love answering them. I love addressing them during Law Chat, or even I do a Tip Tuesday as well. So I love addressing them during both of those days. So I give it, I try to keep it open to my audience and my community if they have questions. And then I do a monthly Q&A live Law Chat as well.
So where are those? The monthly and the weekly?
On Instagram.
They're all on Instagram.
Okay. Now.
Okay. So they're on IG Live.
Now they're on IGTV. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're on IGTV, but I'm so glad you're asking that question because I am now transforming all of that to YouTube. Mm-hmm. So come August, I'm hoping to launch my YouTube channel and my podcast at that time as well.
Well, this episode won't air until after August 1st. So if you're listening to this, then you're going to need to find GBP Law, the YouTube channel, in order to see all of this amazing content. Because this episode won't air for a little while. So I want to make sure,
that's great.
How meta that we're talking about something that hasn't happened yet as if it's already happened or something. Time travel is real. No, I'm kidding. So I wanted to ask you, Girija, what are you curious about right now? What are you learning? What's the big thing in your life that you're like, oh, I'm so excited about this?
Oh gosh, I love learning, first of all. And whenever I feel a lack of confidence in something, I defer to education because then I feel smarter.
Totally.
It's like I'm such a nerd when it comes to this, but I love learning about new law that's coming out. I love learning about the Supreme Court of the United States and their opinions that are coming down. I love learning about case law because it really helps me help my clients as well and helps me in doing better business in my law firm. I love learning about the creative community and how to make my business better in the creative world. And what I mean by that is learning about how to do Instagram better or how to do SEOs or how, like, all of that techie stuff. I love learning because I'm so bad at it. So I enjoy learning about it again, gaining confidence through education. And so I really enjoy learning about those things. I try to stay away from information that is unnecessary and that actually brings a lot of negativity. I don't like to fill my cup up with negativity or fill my energies with that either. Mm-hmm.
It makes all sorts of sense. And I really appreciate that you said that there's plenty of negativity to go around. It's good to focus on the positive and on what we can fix. I have one last question. And before I ask it, I'm so grateful to you for taking this time. What a lovely person you are, but also you're just a font of incredibly useful, stress relieving knowledge. So I'm really, really grateful to you for being on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for giving me that perspective also. Stress relief. I've never used it. You just might see that on Instagram now.
I love it. I love it. Well, I follow you on Instagram like a hawk, so I will look for it. So I have this last question that I ask of everybody who's on the show. And it's a silly question, but I find it to be extremely interesting and impactful. And the question is this: if you had an airplane that could skywrite something for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Oh gosh. Oh, I would literally say my motto, which is keep moving forward. God has your back.
That's lovely. That's very lovely.
I truly follow that in my life. So I just, you know, we all face different challenges in different seasons. And, you know, keeping your head up high and knowing that there is a bigger plan out there. And, you know, so that's my motto. Keep moving forward. God has my back.
I love it. There we go. And if I, you know, if I were an actor on the stage right now, I'd go and scene. That's it. That's all we need. Is there any other bit of wisdom? Is there anything else you would like to say that I have not asked you about?
I don't know. I feel like we talked about so much and
we really did.
I feel like I also like overwhelmed a lot, but you know, my goal is not that. And I do want you or your listeners or, you know, if there are questions out there, don't be afraid to ask, because that's why there are questions and that's why there's an inquiry and that's why there are people out there like me that can help and that can answer. And there's, you know, I know that this is an old adage that there's no stupid question. And, you know, some people might say absolutely not, there are stupid questions, but no, they're not. So if there's are questions out there and they're important to you and they're important to your business, definitely ask them. There are people out there that are really wanting to serve the community. I'm one of them. And I know a lot of other people in my community that are that too. So
you know, and it's funny, you said that you doled out a lot of overwhelm. You didn't actually. You have a gift for explaining things in terms that are pretty easy to understand, you know?
Thank you.
And I think that that's like, even again, I got into law school, but notice I did not go to law school. you know, I got in and that was
great. You saved yourself.
No. Well, my life would definitely be different if I had gone to law school, because I was gonna go into the joint JDMA program at American University in international law, and
Wow.
My life would be I would have a very different life than I have right now.
But
anyway, yeah, I no, you do. You have a gift. You have a gift for explaining things in a way that puts everything into perspective. For me, it's that whole idea of the law through, you know, stress relief. I think that's, or stress relief through the law, I should say. There's something very positive that I hope that you realize that you have. It's lovely and it's wonderful. And I'm really grateful to you for bringing so much knowledge to those of us who just didn't understand before exactly how much of a friend the law can be. So thank
yes.
you so much, Gary Jeffrey.
Thank you. And thank you for your words of encouragement. Honestly, it's so nice to hear that. I mean, I just met you and it's so nice because we don't hear that often. I mean, we as like normally humans, like it's like we don't really hear all the positivity that comes back. And I just thank you so much for opening the doors to your audience and to opening the doors to your podcast for me. I am so grateful for that. I'm so grateful that I can share my message with you and that you also, you know, welcome me with open arms. And it was really easy talking to you. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Absolutely. Well, I hope that you, if you're listening to this and you need to know about contracts, head over to yourcontractbuddy.com, find out the best ways to relieve that stress and to take care of yourself, because that's what this is, it turns out, all about. And I'm so grateful to have that perspective, which I did not have. Girija, again, I thank you so much for being here and for spreading and dropping so much wisdom.
Thank you so much.
So if you have been enjoying the Creative Mindset Podcast, please leave a review. You've learned probably a ton today. Leave a review. Let me know what you're thinking. If you have questions or comments, you can get in touch with me at any time. I'm here every week, as you know, to answer the questions of how creatives can thrive in the business world. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg, and let's get to it. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2020. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg, and I send you all of my love.